If you like your ladies wild and feisty, you have come to the right place. I'm Jody Ambrose, author of Sex, How to Get More of It, and Intimacy, How to Get More of It, and there's nothing I'd rather do on a Monday night at 9 o'clock p.m. Eastern than tune in to the amazing ladies of Cougar Chat Radio. Enjoy the show!
Welcome to Cougar Chat Radio. There was clearly something wrong with my sound. It's like, play, damn it, play. It's Monday, March 4th, 2013. I'm Jen in North Carolina, and I'm joined by Michelle in Pennsylvania. Nan, our other co-host is in Virginia, is sick tonight, so she might call in, she might not. Tonight, we bring you a heartwarming story about a Marine sniper, John Dunning. John served 5 honorable years in the United States Marine Corps and 2 combat tours in Iraq, where he earned many decorations and completed many combat missions as a scout sniper. A few of his accomplishments include 36 confirmed kills, one of which is Saddam Hussein's Republican Guard General, second in command, and I will let him give the name before I just demolish the name. 112 combat missions, 11 secret missions, 2 top secret missions, a Purple Heart, and a Presidential Unit Citation, which, if you're not familiar with that, is the equivalent of the Navy Cross. It's given for extraordinary heroism in action against an armed enemy. As you can imagine, John suffered mentally and physically, battling a drinking problem, and attempted suicide multiple times. He'll be talking about how he turned his life around, and he'll be giving advice to others. So, Michelle, how was your weekend? What did you do?
Oh, my, what did I do? You know, it just went too quick. I reorganized my entire kitchen yesterday.
Oh, dear.
So, oh, yeah, the cupboards and everything, and it looks pretty sharp right now. And I found a can of pumpkin from, like, back in 2005.
Where was it?
In my cupboard. It was way back in the back.
Oh, God, that sounds like my dad's beach house.
Yeah, so, yeah. So that's what I tackled. But hey, it looks all sweet now, so I'm good.
Good.
How about you?
What did I do this weekend? Well, I feel like I have a baby now. I have a 3-year-old poodle that I got from the pound, and he just demands 100% of my attention.
Mm.
Not playing with him, he'll whine and yip and, you know, push the ball my way. Play with me, play with me. And so I miss my naps.
You don't take naps. Come on now.
Now and then. But now that I can't, I want to.
Ah. Well, doesn't the puppy take naps?
Oh, no.
My cats do. My cats do. They take cat naps all day long.
Yeah, not much. Well, I don't want him to gain weight either, because my mom has a poodle who's supposed to be the same size. Poor thing's 15 pounds, and he doesn't get hardly any exercise. And so, yes, I want him to continue to run around. But
well, then you should probably quit crying about it. Just saying.
Right. So, current events. I was catching up on some current events today. And for all you ladies who and men who might be interested to know, Hugh Jackman says he is not gay. Apparently, he and his wife have been hearing these rumors for years, and they're completely sick of it. His wife, Deborah, though, you know, kudos to her. She's 13 years older than he is. So.
Ooh, future it up. My thought exactly.
Additionally, NBC is ready for Leno to retire. Do you think he's funny?
No, it's not him. It's the writers, you know. And if he wasn't looking at the cue cards so much, it may come off funnier. But, I mean, it's such a dead giveaway. He gets up there, stands, and looks right at this thing and just reads off.
Well, Jimmy Fallon supposedly is who they want him to replace, or to they want to replace him with Jimmy Fallon, who I don't think is very funny either, but that's just me.
Yeah, I'm not. I think he's okay in commercials, but that's about it.
Capital One. Little baby.
I always liked Johnny Carson myself, so.
Yeah, Johnny Carson was funny.
I don't like changes too much, so.
And if anyone watched One Day at a Time, did you ever watch that show?
Oh, my God, yeah. I'm old enough.
The mom died. Bonnie Franklin died.
Just yes.
Insane. I guess if you're going to go out, that's a great number to go out on. Do not. And now I feel completely old because Britney Spears' little sister, Jamie Lynn, got engaged. She's 21. And of course, has a baby. What, she had that baby at 16, 17?
Yeah, I think so. I was going to say, wasn't she already hooked up?
Yeah, but she broke up with the baby daddy, and now she's been dating again for years now, who's now 30. So you do the math, and that's almost jailbait, right?
Well, let me tell you what's old. Is I had heard the term baby's daddy or whatever, and I'm like, what the hell is that? And some kids had explained it to me. I'm like, oh, my God. Why don't you call it the baby's father?
It's funnier to say baby daddy.
Oh, gosh.
Got to change with the times. And a former Miss Teen winner from Delaware had to give up her crown over a porn scandal. She tried to get out of it by saying it wasn't her, but the producer said, came up with evidence where she had, you know, actually said, this is such and such, and I am of right mind, and I am not on anything, and yada, yada, yada.
Oh.
Sadly, she only made $1,500 from it, but has been offered $250,000 to be the spokesperson for an online porn site, and I would take the money and run.
Wow. So I wonder if she could have got that money if she was still, like, the Teen America thing, you know, with modeling and so forth.
Right.
Did you hear about the house down in Florida?
The sinkhole. We were just talking about that before we came on. That is awful.
Oh, my gosh. I can't even imagine what their family's going through.
The family had the house had been in the family since the 70s, and just all of a sudden the ground opened up and swallowed an entire room, including the 37-year-old owner, male owner. And the brother, I guess, tried to jump in and save him.
Yeah.
And the rescue crew had to save him, the brother.
Yeah.
There's no body been found yet, and I doubt there will be.
No, they're saying they're probably not going to try any recovery because it's just too dangerous. I think the whole last time I heard was like 60 feet deep.
Oh, gosh. That's awful.
Yeah.
Awful, awful, awful. But on a, you know, a more...
Chipper
note, yes. A 2.5-year-old Mississippi child has apparently been cured of HIV. What the doctor did was up the amount of meds to the baby before the disease cells had a chance to take root and hide. And 300,000 children were born with HIV in 2011, so that's a phenomenal first step towards eliminating that disease. And it's the second known cured person. The first was a man in Germany in 2007 who had a blood stem cell transplant and is seemingly still negative for the disease.
Yeah, they did bone marrow.
Yeah, that's awesome.
So why don't they just do that with other people then?
I don't know. I don't know if everyone's body works the same.
Well, I'm sure someone has probably been trying. So,
I mean, it's like, you know, it's like cancer treatments. Something may work on one person and something may not work on the next.
Right.
But anyway.
Yeah, it's great, though, for the baby.
Yes, it is great. Well, we are going to take a short break, play a song. We're going to play our friend Scarletta. Apparently, according to Billboard, they are the next big country group to watch, and their song is here right now. And when we come back, we'll have our guest. We'll be right back.
I can't get any hotter. Let's run along the shore.
Scarletta with Right Here, Right Now. They are the next band to watch out of Nashville. Speaking of, Michelle, do you watch Nashville?
No, I don't. No, I'm always working. I work night shift.
Well, do you have a DVR?
No.
Fran.
Yeah, I know. I'm so behind. I'm like 10 years behind time here.
It's funny. We are back, and I believe we have our guest, John Dunning. John, are you with us?
Yes, ma'am.
Hi, how are you?
Pretty good. Yourself?
I'm doing great. Thank you for coming on. We look forward to chatting
with you. All righty.
Well, we will get right with it. So tell us how you came to be in the military.
I was pretty well headed down a one-way street that wasn't going anywhere. I had a love for firefighting.
Mm-hmm.
I started the volunteer fire department in my hometown in Kentucky, probably when I was just before 16, just before I was supposed to. So I started cleaning floors at the station and cleaning trucks until I turned 16 and was able to go out on an actual house fire.
Okay.
So during that time, of course, fires, it doesn't matter if I'm in class, at school, or what. If a fire is going to happen, it's going to happen. So it ended up, I started missing a lot of school. I was more concerned with riding out with the ambulance and the fire department than I was classwork, and I wasn't doing very good in school. So I ended up quitting school. I just kind of felt like I was wasting my time going, wasting teachers' time and everybody else. And I ended up going to a military academy. And during military academy, that's when I kind of fell in love with the military and the way of life, and not really having to plan anything out. Everything was planned out for you, I guess.
Right.
So that's the route I took. I got my GED in a military academy, and shortly after that, I joined the Marines.
What made you choose Marines?
Well, that's another thing about me. I always have to have the best of everything.
Okay.
Whether it be cars or clothes, even if I can't afford it, there's got to be a way for me to have the best. So I always remember my dad talking about, you know, Marines, how much discipline they had and how pretty the uniform was. So I knew I could probably make my dad proud if that's what I did. Instead of nothing against the Army or the Navy, we're all there for the same reason. It's just, I think other members of other branches of service would agree that the level of discipline and stuff in the Marines is far above any of the other.
And women really like Marines.
This is true. This is true.
Yeah.
We won't get into that.
We know your lovely wife is listening. Hello. So how was boot camp? You always hear horror stories about boot camp.
All of them are pretty well true. One of the biggest things I remember is, of course, everybody's scared. You've lived at home all your life. Now you're moving away and hearing all these horror stories, and you're going away. Your mom and dad's not there with you anymore. As far as, you know, beatings and stuff like that, it's not to that level. But the screaming and the, you're going to do this now. That's all pretty well point on.
Wow.
Was there any time during the training that you thought, you know, maybe this isn't for me?
Probably all the time.
Oh, you go through that. Oh, yeah, that's on a daily basis. But that's one thing about being a Marine, and one thing you learn in the Marine Corps. They break you down to a level. When you start feeling that way, then you know the drill instructors are doing their job, because that's what they want. When you feel like you're nothing and a nobody and you can't go anymore, that's when those drill instructors will bring you back up, but not as John Dunning anymore, as a United States Marine, with the discipline, the courage, and the strength to do what you're told to do without asking questions.
Right.
How much training did you have to go through prior to any mission assignment you've had?
A lot of hurry up and wait. Of course, the first thing is boot camp. And then after that, you go to, I didn't just sign up to be a sniper. Excuse me. I signed up to be a grunt, just a basic rifleman. You go through your rifleman school. I forget even how long that was. I think that was maybe a month or two. I can't remember. You go through that, and then you get assigned to a unit. Now, while I was in boot camp, I got picked for security forces. It was a new thing the Marines had came out with, like a anti-terrorist task force. And what they did while a select few were in boot camp, they went through, they interviewed their teachers, just basically did a very in-depth background check and picked a few out of boot camp to go to security forces.
Gotcha.
It was kind of like being an MP, but on a different level. You were going to Bahrain. You were guarding ships with nuclear weapons and stuff like that on them. And that's what I got picked for. So after my rifleman training, I got assigned to 2nd Fast Company, and that was your security force company in Norfolk, Virginia. We were guarding USS Reagan, I believe it was, there in Newport News. They were getting their nuclear reactors changed on the ship, and I just thought that wasn't for me. I knew right then that's not what I wanted to do. I was standing in a shipyard watching a bunch of civilians come in and out every day going to work, the same old thing, knowing nobody's ever going to try to go on this ship and carry off a nuclear reactor. Why am I here?
Yeah.
Right.
So, that wasn't for me. So after that, I went and talked to the company commander there and asked if I could just go to a grunt unit somewhere. So he sent me to 1st Battalion, 5th Marines out of Camp Pendleton, California.
Okay.
And that's where I headed from there.
What do you have to say about government today? Just briefly.
You know, government gets a bad rap.
No, I'm not asking government for detail.
I understand. My point of view on it is government gets sort of a bad rap. It's let's take the Constitution, for instance. The first lines in the Constitution are "We the people." We the people wrote that. That's our laws. That's what we decided. But today, we the people have let the government take control of a country that is ours.
Right.
The people are no longer able to stand for what they believe in, stand up for what they believe in. And when you have, I can stand on my front porch with a shotgun all day and tell you to stay off my porch. And it's not loaded. It's going to keep you away for a couple of days. But if you want what's in my house and you figure out it's not loaded, then you're going to get by me and you're going to take it. And that's exactly what's going on with our government, our country, and our people. The people have to stand up for what they believe in. It's our country, not the government.
Mm-hmm.
Do you agree with the decisions that the government made about the war on terror? And if not, what would you have done differently?
I do. And I don't. I do believe we needed to go over there. There were reports of weapons of mass destruction. The UN obviously wasn't taking care of that. On that sense, I do believe we needed to go in. Now, after being there, I believe there were a few strategies that were played out the way they shouldn't have been that allowed a lot of things that shouldn't have happened to happen. I'm trying to hit as close as I can without saying too much, but I do agree with, and I don't. We had to go, but I believe it was taken control of in a matter that it shouldn't have been.
Right.
Yeah, I definitely believe we should have gone as well, just to set a precedent to the, you know, to the world.
Exactly.
So I understand that the presidential unit citation is the equivalent of the Navy Cross, and when did you receive that?
I believe that was in 2004, but now the Navy Cross is a personal award. The Presidential Unit Citation is an award for the unit as a whole.
Okay.
So our unit, Charlie Company, Weapons Company, 1st Battalion, that's what we received while we were in Iraq.
Okay.
How were you treated when you came back?
I was treated really, really well. It's the way I treated myself and the way I perceived myself that probably made me see things in a different aspect. And there's a lot of things when I first came back that I don't even remember. The first thing I remember doing when I got back was hitting the bottle.
Right.
And I drowned in it for months and months and months. So I wasn't treated bad. It wasn't Vietnam era. It was just on a sense. My mom and dad didn't even know what I did in the Marine Corps until after I was already doing it. My life was basically a lie. Yeah. Everything I did, everywhere I was, it had to be a lie.
Right.
So my perception of life at that point, it makes it hard to answer a question like that. Now, if you're going along the lines of were we treated like Vietnam vets when they got back, no, we were treated great.
Good. Okay.
How difficult was it? And actually, that's more the point of our interview.
Go ahead.
No, you go ahead. Go ahead and finish your thought there.
Being over there wasn't bad at all. I actually, in a sick, crude kind of way, actually had a lot of fun over there because I didn't have to worry about anything except for me. If I made the wrong decision, I died. If I made the right decision, I got to come back and go out again. But as far as when you come back home, that's a whole new story. You don't know who you are anymore. You don't want to be who you actually are. And there will always be a part of you that stayed behind. You didn't get killed at war, but again, you got killed at war because you'll never be who you was.
Yeah, I wanted to ask, if I would play a video game constantly, I would start to visualize it, I think, in reality. How are you able to separate your experience from your life's reality? Or are you able to?
At first, no. I wasn't able to. It was just kind of a forced being able to. You really don't have a sense of reality, and that's the hardest part about coming back because, everybody tells you, go to a psychiatrist, go talk to somebody, go do this, go do that. And it's a whole different level, say, for a child or somebody who's been beaten and they go talk about it to somebody who understands, who's been there. But in a case like mine, a lot of the things that I did, I can't even talk about. I can't ever talk about. And it makes it hard to go talk to somebody about it and get rid of those feelings about it when even if you did, nobody would ever understand because they wasn't there. And you can't draw a picture clear enough to imagine what it was like to be in a situation like that.
You can't even talk to a government psychologist or can't talk to anyone?
You can, but there again, most of those guys, especially Marine Corps and Navy, those guys are officers. They've never left the States. They've never been in missions like that. You could talk to them about some of the things that you did as far as a government level or a secret level. But there again, you feel like you're just spouting off at the mouth because they could never understand. And they can't look at you and say, I know how you feel. This is what I did, and this is how I handled it. Mm-hmm. All you're doing to yourself is reliving it again day in and day out more vivid than you would if you just go get drunk and try to forget it.
Mm.
What were some things you wish you hadn't done while overseas fighting?
First of all, I'm not ashamed of anything that I ever did.
Sure.
Because I know
that's different.
Do it.
Yes.
There's a lot of situations I wish I hadn't have had to been put in. There's two things that really changed me as a person, and one of those was when I had to shoot a kid. And that really changed me as a person. I wish I hadn't have been put in that situation, but I was. And today, I'm not ashamed of it. A year ago, I was. So to answer that question, I'm not ashamed or afraid of anything that I've done. I just wish that hadn't have been brought on to me the way it was.
Can you talk about what happened and how that occurred?
The little girl we had pushed through, we had already made the push all the way through the country.
Mm-hmm.
And we had set up shop at one of Saddam's palaces on the Tigris River. Now, for nobody who's ever seen these palaces, they're like something you would see on TV. It's just a massive, massive compound.
Mm-hmm.
And they have walls built around them like a fort. maybe that you would see on TV, just huge concrete walls and barriers. One of my jobs after I got there with the companies that I was attached to as a sniper was taking fire watch up on top of the palace and watching over the National Guard that had checkpoints set up outside the gates, doing traffic control, monitoring people. We were also bringing in injured soldiers, injured Marines. They were taking charge of that. There was a white van that had pulled up probably 800 or 900 yards away from that checkpoint. And one thing you have to understand when you're a soldier or a Marine in Iraq is kids will always flock to you. You have food, you have candy, you're somebody new to talk to. All kids are curious. The white van had stopped sideways in the middle of the road, which caught everybody's attention. I wasn't even paying attention at the time. I probably shouldn't say that, but I heard it on the radio, them talking, so I looked down, and the side door had opened on the van. Two males got out, and with the two males, they reached inside and got out a little kid. They set the kid on the ground, and the kid started walking towards the gate with his arms open. The two males got back in the van, and the van drove off. Well, nobody really thought much about it, and two of the soldiers had came out from behind the sandbags to go grab the kid. Mm. Well, this kid was walking up. It had a little white robe on. The wind was blowing, and I seen wires, and you could see the black and the yellow through the white gown. My captain was up on top with me, eating an MRE. We were all eating at the time, and he looked through the spotter scope. And he looked back at me and said, "Now you got to be a sniper." And I still remember that. I get bumps if I say it because it was like he didn't want to tell me kill the kid. He just said it in his own way. So I remember looking through the scope, and it was the hardest thing I've ever had to do. And I pulled the trigger. And at that point, I felt like I didn't have any feelings anymore. All I wanted to do was cry and say, I'm sorry, but I still had a job to do and I had to shut that off. But at the same time, when you shut that off, it's like your brain and your body and everything you ever had shut off at the same time. It's hard to explain what happens to you in that moment. And I remember after I did that, it didn't kill her. I didn't know it was a girl at that point. I didn't find out till later, but I ran downstairs when the National Guard brought her inside the gate. They took her to the Navy medics and the docs, and they had her downstairs in the palace where a bunch of the other Marines were hanging out. And I shot her right leg off. And I remember her laying there in the gurney. She wasn't crying. She wasn't making any. The only thing I could hear was gurgling sound, and like she was trying to hear. And I remember her body jerking and jumping up and down on the gurney. And I remember staring. I wasn't happy. I wasn't sad. At that point, I didn't want to cry. I just remember, it's like you're looking in a dream or something. I just remember staring at it. There was no feeling about it whatsoever. And from that point on, that's just the way I stayed.
Well, we need to take a quick break to play a couple commercials. And when we come back, we'll discuss the rest of the mission and how you brought yourself back and how you turned yourself around. So, guys, hang with us. We'll be right back with John Dunning.
Hey, Jen, do you know where we can get some great T-shirts?
We should use Dark Side, Inc. They're a unique apparel company that strives to give the customer the most diversified choices in design. We could get some rockin' T-shirts from them. All merchandise and original artwork is done in-house, so we need to give them a call at 508-676-6606 or go to darksideinc.com. And until next time, remember, everyone has a dark side. Hey, New Jersey, need work done on your BMW or other fine car? Montclair Motorworks in Montclair, New Jersey offers fast, reliable service with competitive pricing. With a BMW tech on site, they also have a state inspection station. Let Montclair Motorworks help you. Call them today at 973-744-9839. That's 973-744-9839.
Are you tired of waiting for Halloween to be frightened? Then get your scare on this coming March 21st through the 24th as Phenomenology comes back to Gettysburg, Pennsylvania. Phenomenology 105 is the largest and most eclectic paranormal conference in the Northeast. Come meet and greet with celebrity guests, attend paranormal investigations and lectures, and have more fun than a gaggle of zombies in a cage match. Scheduled celebrity guests include John Zaffis and the cast of Sci-Fi's Haunted Collector,
Destination Truth, Josh Gates and Rex Williams,
Psychic Kids stars and psychic mediums Chip Coffee and Christopher Fleming,
Darkness Radio's Dave Schrader and Tim Dennis,
Pennsylvania Bigfoot researcher Eric Altman,
Brian Cano, Chris Mancuso, and the Scared Crew,
Extreme Haunting Survivor Bill Bean,
UFO Abductee Travis Walton,
and much, much more. Also, don't miss out on our junior ghost hunts,
private paranormal investigations,
scaryoke in the lounge,
and the first annual Zombie Ball.
That's March 21st through the 24th in Gettysburg, Pennsylvania. For tickets, visit the website at www.phenomevents.com. That's www.phenomevents.com. Phenomenology 105, where fact and fiction collide.
Hey everyone, you're listening to Cougar Chat. We are talking to John Dunning, ex-Marine sniper. John, you with us?
Yes, ma'am.
Is that appropriate to say ex? Are you an ex-Marine or are you still a Marine? How does that
I was
work?
Just about to call you out on that on a brighter note. That's once a Marine, always a Marine.
Always a Marine. Okay, thank you. Now I know.
Call her out.
Thank you. We were having a very somber moment there before we went on break. Do you want to talk about how the rest of the mission, was that the same mission when you got Saddam's second in command? And what was his name?
No, that was totally different. And I actually talked to my manager about that. We went through some other people, and right at the moment, until some more things get cleared through and I get some paperwork back, I'm not allowed to talk about that mission.
Okay. Can you at least give the guy's name that you killed, or no?
Not right now, not at the moment.
Okay.
I apologize.
Sure, no problem at all.
It just means you have to come back and visit.
That's right.
Oh, I can definitely do that.
And bring your wife with you.
Oh, all right.
So it sounds like you had it pretty tough when you came back mentally and physically. Tell us what you went through and how you turned things around.
Like
how you continue to.
Right, definitely. You come back not really knowing who you are anymore. Once you get broke down to that level and that type of training, and then you actually go through the real life. I used to listen to this song over and over after I got back. Forget who sings it, but it was a country song called The Tin Man. And that's actually what you felt like. You, even back in the civilian world, you had no feelings at all. You forget how to love, you forget how to care about somebody. Even something simple as thank you or excuse me doesn't mean anything to you. That's nothing. If you have to go to the bathroom, then that's a mission. I have to go to the bathroom and I have to come back. It doesn't matter who gets in my way, who's standing in the way. There's no excuse me. There's no thank you. I'm going to the bathroom and I'm coming back. Mm-hmm. And that sounds crazy and stupid, but it's, you really lose track of who you were, even your family. I oftentimes tell a lot of people, and it bothers me now a lot more than it used to. After I had done those missions in Iraq, I could have got a call on the satellite phone, and they could have told me one of my family members had been killed in a horrific car accident. And I probably wouldn't have shed a tear because I wouldn't have ever felt anything. It's not that I didn't want to or I didn't love my family or like my family. I just I forgot how to feel any of that. Mm-hmm. And that comes back with you. That's why I say, you know, a lot of these guys will tell you the same thing. Part of you never comes home from Iraq, because when you went over there as a person, when you come home, that person stays over there. It's lost somewhere. It's gone. You'll never get it back again. And it makes it really hard to live everyday life out of the bottle, and that's where I found my comfort, was in the bottle.
Yeah. Now, were you married at the time, or did you?
No.
When did you get?
No, I wasn't.
Okay.
I got married in January of. Oh my God, she's listening. She's gonna kill me.
We are gonna go to a quick break. Try to save you here, John.
No, I will say, my wife was one of the biggest turning points in my life.
Good.
My wife and my mother both. They were huge turning points in my life. They brought me back to who I was, and God bless my wife. Even today, I still have a lot of problems, and she's my light at the end of the tunnel. She can always bring me back to reality and, babe, everything's going to be okay. We're all here. We love you. It's all right. And I really thank God he sent her in my life, because if she hadn't been here, I wouldn't be here today either.
That's sweet.
Wow.
But there's somebody else that has helped you. You want to go into that?
Right. My mother. She was there before my wife. I actually went AWOL from the Marine Corps after I got back. Yeah, I know. after I got back the second time, I was getting ready to get out within 6 months, but they had a shortage of snipers, and they were going to send me back again. The only way I knew I was getting through every day was staying drunk from morning till night. And that's the only way I functioned, because on base anymore, I didn't have a job. I was a short timer. All I did was hang around. I tell them I'm there in the morning. I tell them I'm there at night, and I go to bed. So I made it every day by being drunk. And I knew I couldn't go through that again, not only for me, but for the person to the left and to the right of me. And I didn't want to be responsible for having to tell another mother that her Marine's dead because of something that I screwed up. And I'd already had to tell one mother her Marine was dead, not because of something I did, but because of a mission I was on. And that is probably one of the most gut-wrenching, stomach-turning feelings you will ever feel, is being at a military funeral and handing a mother a folded-up flag and telling her thank you for her son's service. You want to reach out and hug them. You want to reach out and tell them it's okay, but it's not going to be okay.
Yeah.
And you can't hug them because you're in uniform and it's just not what you're supposed to do. So I didn't want to have to go through all that again on top of what I was dealing with. So I called my mom and dad one night, told them I was AWOL. I left base. I wanted to come home.
Mm-hmm.
So they all got together. I scrounged pennies together. One of the bars that I was living at 24/7, some of those guys helped me, and I got me a bus to get home. And when I got home, I promised my mom, you know, I was going to get help because the Marine Corps wasn't offering it to me. That's one of the biggest reasons I left. It was at that before PTSD was ever known about. So they weren't offering you help. Nobody wanted to hear what you were going through. You're a Marine. Suck it up. Grab your rifle and keep going. So I told my mom, I want to come home and I want to get help, but I never got help. I just... From dusk till dawn, I did the same thing at home I did before I left. I just stayed drunk. And one of the biggest turning points was during that time. My mom has cancer.
That's
my mom. I would give my life for my mom. Anybody would do that. And I remember I was drinking one night. And when I would get to drinking, that's when I would want to cry and talk about stuff. And mom never would lose it. She would listen. But I remember that one night my mom lost it. And I'll never forget that picture of my mom sitting there with her head in her hand, just bawling her eyes out.
Mm-hmm.
Hear me, that was a Marine. I was fighting for my country. I wanted to make my mom proud. And now I'd hurt my mom more than anything. And that really grabbed me in a way and said, hey, man, you got to wake up. You got to do something. So that's when I started going and talking to somebody and trying to get help.
So who got you going to church?
This was later.
Okay.
I started getting help and I started doing better. Mm-hmm. And I took another downfall. This was after I'd already gotten married. I'd had my first little girl, Cheyenne. Cheyenne and my wife, they're my heart and they're my world. And my bad decisions, one thing about being a sniper, as I told you earlier, you're a very selfish person because the only person you have to rely on is yourself. And that's not a switch you can just turn off. I'm sure it'll stay with me the rest of my life. I have to continue each day trying to learn to get away from that. But in that and in those decisions and being who I was, my wife had just had all she could take. So one day she grabbed my daughter and she grabbed her bags and she said, I can't live like this anymore.
Right.
I was making bad financial decisions. I was very selfish. My wife was the last thing on my mind. My daughter was the last thing on my mind. It was all about me and what I have to do to make it. And they finally got tired of it, and they packed up and left. And my sister, me and my sister, we have a very special relationship. Even saying right now, I probably haven't talked to my sister since Christmas or Thanksgiving. But I left the house that night, and I went to the American Legion, the only place I felt like I'd be welcome, you know, amongst a bunch of other veterans.
Right.
And she came and picked me up. She said, listen, I'm not letting you do this because I know what you're going to do. You're going to get in your truck. You're going to go out, try to drive home, kill yourself, kill somebody else. And at that point, I didn't care. I didn't care if I killed anybody else. It was they to me, you know. I wanted to die, so good. What if that happened? Good. That's how I felt about it. But she took me home, and she talked to me for a while, sat down on the kitchen floor and talked to me. And there again, that struck a note in my head. You know, the one person that I never got along with, that I never take 5 minutes out of the day to call and say, hey, how are you doing, was reaching out to me. Selfish John Dunning. So I said, you know what, take me to the church. I thought, you know, psychiatrists can't help me. Everybody talks about all this God stuff being so wonderful. I didn't really look up to God or anything. I was a see it to believe it person.
Right.
So her and my aunt came and picked me up, and they took me to church. This was late at night. I remember they called in some of the pastors from the church, and they showed up at the church to come with me.
Wow.
And they prayed for me, and I prayed, and I remember when I lifted my head up, I felt like my skin was flushed. I felt like I could breathe, like I could pick my shoulders up again, and that was a huge turning point for me.
Wow.
A lot of weight was lifted off.
Oh, yes, definitely, definitely.
Nice.
She felt forgiven, yeah.
Exactly.
So,
exactly.
With the knowledge that you have now, if you had, you know, if you needed to go back and fight more missions, do you think you'd be able to cope with it better, knowing what you know now?
That's a special kind of question. Knowing what I know now, I think it would mess me up. Knowing that I've learned how to love again, how to care again, raise a family, be a husband and a father. I think it would be a huge weight that would bother me and hinder me on a mission. However,
gotcha.
What scares me is the fact that that's easy to turn off given that situation. If they put me on a plane tonight and sent me back over there, I would be fine. However, I would be starting over with my family here in civilian life from zero again. The civilian life is hard to turn back on. The military life is not.
Ah, okay.
Well, I mean, one mistake over there and you're done. You have to be on 24/7. I can't imagine mentally what you went through. And
exactly.
Still go through.
And you bring that home. I mean, when I walk out the front door, I notice everything. If there's an extra cigarette butt laying in my driveway, I know somebody's been there.
Oh, wow.
I have an OCD like you wouldn't imagine. I mean, I know where everything. I can tell if somebody moved a pepper shaker in my house. I know when something's not right.
Wow.
Did you learn something overseas you hadn't expected to learn?
Yeah. Even with the missions that I was on, and everything that you psych yourself up that you're fighting for, and you're going to go find this, and you're going to get rid of it. I never once saw a weapon of mass destruction. I saw pictures and I saw evidence that there were from the Gulf era. But during our time and the missions that I went on, I never saw anything like that.
What did you miss most about the U.S.?
Honestly, the first few weeks I missed things you wouldn't even imagine. Toilet paper, things you never even think about missing. But after a couple of weeks, I really didn't even think about home anymore. And there for a time, I couldn't honestly say I even wanted to come back home. I was
oh
in my
gosh.
Element. I was doing what I was trained to do, and I liked that. I didn't start having ill feelings or not being myself until I came back home, because then I was out of my element. I wasn't a sniper anymore. I wasn't a Marine anymore. I didn't call my own shots anymore. That's when I felt out of my element, when I came back home.
Yeah. I have a cousin struggling with PTSD currently, and he ended up having to leave, or his wife left him. The kids and the wife left him. he would get belligerent and drink a lot, and was homeless for a while, and is still struggling. So
I've been there, and it's not easy.
Yeah.
But you don't have to do it by yourself. There's a higher power, and the cool thing about him and trusting in God is you don't have to explain anything to him, because he was there with you. Even when you didn't believe in him, even when you never turned to him, even when you told him to go away, you didn't need him. He was right there with you. You don't have to explain anything to him.
Right, right.
Now, do you continue to have any nightmares or anything?
At times I do, but it's different than they used to be when I first came home. Now it's more along the lines, my dreams will be that I'm at my house or I'm riding down the road with my family and we hit an IED or we hit an ambush. And now I have to worry about not me, but I have to worry about saving my family. So the stress level is higher when you wake up than it was.
Gotcha.
I'd like to, I was wondering, when Jen was reading the introduction, I was wondering, what's the difference between a secret mission and top secret?
That's all intelligence stuff. They'll place a label on things. There's different levels to intelligence, just like there's different ranks in the military, corporal, sergeant, staff sergeant. So once you get up to the intelligence level and psyops level, interrogations, they'll place secret or top secret on something, defining which department knows about it, which department doesn't need to know about it, that would hinder another mission.
Okay. So the higher, the more secretive.
Exactly.
That makes sense. We have a question from chat. How did you train or learn to recognize if something was not the norm, like you mentioned when the extra cigarette or something is out of place? Did that just come with the job, or is that something you trained for specifically?
A lot of that starts in boot camp, just being a Marine. You know, you hear stories, they have to bounce a quarter off your bed. Your shoes have to be spit shine. You have to have creases in your clothes. You want to make everything as perfect as you can. Then you go to a different level. You go to sniper school. That brings it in even to a different level, making sure when you walk somewhere, you look back, there's no footprints. If you broke a branch, you need to fix it. So all of this gets built into your brain just to say you would go home and clean your house. And that stays with you forever. When I come home and I park my truck, I know if my truck's sitting at a certain angle or not, because I look at it before I go in the house. My vehicles, I try to keep them clean. If there's a fingerprint somewhere, I notice little things like that from having to do it so long and having to do everyday life in such detail.
Wow.
So it just comes naturally.
It's not something you learn. It's something that's built into you over a period of time.
Gotcha. Well, on a lesser scale, as a mom and a wife, I know when things have been moved around the house and, you know, nobody can clean like I can.
I don't know. I'd have to have a competition with you on that one.
No. That's in my mind in my own house.
I know what you're saying. I got you.
Yeah. Everything has a place. Everything in its
exactly.
place.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And you don't think about it as being for a reason, but it is.
Just do it. Yeah, you just do it.
Exactly.
So if many in the military then are desensitized, this is more of a vague question. Do you think that, you know, there's all the conspiracy theorists out there, and there's people saying that the government is picking members in the military that would shoot on civilians. Have you heard anything about this, or do you think that's even possible?
I'm not going to say it's not possible. I mean, we've let our government become more powerful than we could ever imagine, and I mean, that's our own fault. So I'm not saying anything is impossible. I'm not going to get into too much detail about that. I mean, I'm a conspiracy theorist myself, but I could go on and on about that all night.
Yeah.
As powerful as we've let our government get, they're capable of doing anything. The media is run by the government. There's nothing that they couldn't do. If you turn on the news today and see a story, you're probably going to believe it. And, you know, that's any American you talk to. So I believe they're capable of doing anything that they think they have to do.
Hmm. What's sad is Michelle and I were talking about some current events before you came on, and I don't know if you heard, but what's sad is you hear nothing about, you know, a child who's cured of AIDS. But you hear all
exactly.
the sequestration and all this, you know, giving money
right,
to Egypt
right.
and all of this bullshit.
And, you know, I'm glad you said that. That's the reason I've decided to come out and start talking.
Mm-hmm.
Is because just like that, society has changed since
yes.
we were all kids. And I think God has been pulled out of society
yep.
without us even knowing it. And that's the biggest problem. And the reason that's been done, in my point of view, is when you turn on the news and you see a bad story or a house fire or a 10-car pileup, you're going to watch that. But if you see some kid with no legs that got helped across the finish line in a marathon, you're probably going to change the channel.
Mm-hmm.
And church is the same way today. Church, you have a lot of mainstream churches that have been doing things the same way for 40, 50 years. And you have young kids going in there. It's the same thing, repetitive, 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 every Sunday. And they don't remember anything when they walk out. So I'm not coming out to tell stories to be rich or be famous. I want to try to go to all the churches that I can, juvenile detention centers, because if you tell a story that'll make somebody cry or it'll grab mm-hmm. somebody's heart or make somebody mad, they're going to remember that.
Exactly.
And everybody
yeah.
has struggles. Everybody has struggles. Everybody has something they're ashamed of. I was ashamed of killing a kid, but I gave it to God. I'll go out today and tell anybody. Hey, I love God. I give my life for God. And he knows that. I say a lot of cuss words every day. I drink. I probably drink more than I should. But I don't do it because I hate God. It's a different society. And people have
right.
to stop being ashamed. And I want to get out there, and I want to tell somebody something on a Sunday morning that they'll remember, that they don't have to be ashamed to go to school and say, you know what? Hey, you got problems, give it up to God. You don't have to be ashamed of that. It doesn't matter what anybody else says. You're your own person. You're an American, and somebody died for your right to do that. And if enough people would believe that and stand up for something they believe in, then it would be a lot better place.
Absolutely. Well, John, where can people find you for speaking engagements or events? And are you coming up with a website or anything?
Right now, I believe you have Michael Beckman's information.
Yeah.
He's the one doing all the bookings and all of that. He'd be the person to get in contact with.
And you can find Michael Beckman on Facebook.
Facebook, correct.
Yeah.
I don't have his number right here in front of me.
Well, he'd probably be mad if we gave his number out. Let's not do that.
Yeah, probably so. Probably so.
Well, are you? Can you tell us? And if you can't understand, are you in the process of writing a book? Because you should.
I am, and I'm not. I try to sit down. It's hard for me because it's like I said, it's hard to paint a picture to somebody that's not there. So I'll sit down and I'll write a few lines, and then I'll look at it later and I'll think, nah, that's not the way it should go, and I'll erase it. So I've been in the process of doing that for a couple of years, I guess, on and off. It's a lot harder to do than I thought it would be.
Gotcha.
Maybe you should get a recorder and just speak it out.
Yeah.
And
I've done that too. And then another problem that I've ran into when I got with Michael and decided I wanted to go to churches, you know, and try to reach people. I took some of my stories and I wanted to do it the right way. I took it through a DOD official, and now I have to wait on them to work on a few things and work out a few details on what I can say and what I can't. So
right.
I don't want to go out there and tell a bunch of stuff that I'm not supposed to, or I'm going to get in trouble for. So I want to go through all the right channels and do it the right way.
Absolutely.
Well, we look forward to having you back on when you can discuss more. But John Dunning, thank you so much. We've got about a minute left. So if there's something, anything else you'd like to tell the world, now's your chance.
We got to start standing up for what we believe in. We let the government take God from us. Now we're letting the government try to take guns from us. The First Amendment's already been written as a felony. We are the people. We the people wrote the Constitution. We're one nation under God, and God we trust. We all have to get back together, stand back up as a nation, trust in God, and take our country back. Because if not, it's a downhill ride from here.
Yeah. Amen. Well, God bless you, brother.
Well, thank you, ma'am. I appreciate you guys having me on the show.
Absolutely. Michelle, you got something quickly you wanted to ask?
Oh, I just wanted to say that the song, The Tin Man, I believe that was Kenny Chesney.
You are exactly correct. I looked that up after I said it.
Yeah, so anybody out there that's not near the song, check it out.
Very good.
Good
very
song.
Good.
Good song.
Well, John, we'll be in touch, dear, and you have a great week. And tell the wife thank you so much, and hope to meet you guys soon.
Okay. Thank you, ma'am, y'all. God bless you.
All right. Take care.
You too. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
John, he's awesome.
Wow, what a story. Oh, my gosh.
We've only got about 30 seconds left. Next week, we're going to replay the show with former VP of Columbia Pictures, Bill Ewing. On March 18th, we're going to talk to the executive producer, David Wood, of the Resurrection Project, the movie. And we'll have back on. The Resurrection is Bible-based, and it tells the story of Jesus' crucifixion. It is actually the second movie, as the sequel to Mel Gibson's The Passion of the Christ. So we look forward to talking about that. So everyone have a great week.
Bye.